The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 8, text number 6, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on October 1st, 2008, in Copenhagen, Denmark.
Tonight we will read from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 8, Attaining the Supreme, text number 6. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo
Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam.
Yam yam vapi smaran
bhavam. Tijant yante kalevaram. Tijat yante kalevaram. Tam tam me vaiti konteya.
Tam tam
me vaiti konteya. Sadatad bhava bhavita. Sadatad bhava bhavita. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada, the preeminent acharya of the ultimate self-realization science for the modern age. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, in that state he will attain without fail. Purport. In the process of changing one's nature at the critical moment of death is explained here. A person who at the end of his life quits his body thinking of Krishna attains the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. But it is not true that a person who thinks of something other than Krishna attains the same transcendental state. This is a point we should note very carefully. How can one die in the proper state of mind? Maharaj Bharat, although a great personality, thought of a deer at the end of his life, and so in his next life he was transferred into the body of a deer. Although as a deer he remembered his past activities, he had to accept that animal body. Of course, one's thoughts during the course of one's life accumulate to influence one's thoughts at the moment of death, so this life creates one's next life. If in one's present life one lives in the mode of goodness and always thinks of Krishna, it is possible for one to remember Krishna at the end of one's life. That will help one to be transferred to the transcendental nature of Krishna. If one is transcendentally absorbed in Krishna's service, then his next body will be transcendental spiritual, not material. And therefore, the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is the best process for successfully changing one's status of being at the end of one's life. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Bada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Agana Ragunatan Vitantam Sajiva Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Param Sagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha. So, what do you want? Would you like temporality, ignorance, and misery? Or would you prefer eternity, knowledge, and bliss? It's your choice. No one's forcing you. Our movement, Krishna Consciousness Movement, is not to force anyone. We simply want people to know what the choices are. That's all. People don't know they have a choice. They don't know. They struggle the whole life for some illusory happiness. That's all. But what good is illusory happiness? It's an illusion. I tell you, I have really good news for you. I've just brought you a case full of 10 trillion euros. It's a gift for you. 10 trillion euros. Here. You go, wow, 10 trillion euros for me? Yeah, I brought it for you. And you say, but it was only counterfeit money. Oh. It's an illusion. It wasn't real. It wasn't genuine euros. It was counterfeit euros. So, the happiness we struggle for in this world, it may appear to be very nice. Money, power, prestige, fame, material facilities, so many things. But actually, it's simply counterfeit happiness. It seems very nice. Oh, look at this trunk. It's full of euros. Wow. It appears very nice. You become all excited and happy. And you take it to the bank. And they say, sorry, sir, this is counterfeit. You see. So it appears that we have a very wonderful happiness. We have so many skyscrapers. We have all these airlines flying people around. We have buildings and cars and guitars and dishwashers and radios and magazines and newspapers and TV stations and so many facilities. But you know what? If it comes to the final analysis, it revealed the whole thing is counterfeit. There's no substance to it. Why? Because it's all based on the false conception that I am the body. The whole thing, the whole material civilization is built on a false premise. I am this body. If you assume the premise that I am this body, it appears to be a fairly good deal sometimes. Not all the time, sometimes. But once it becomes clear that actually I'm not the body, then the thing doesn't make any sense at all. Nothing. and we're left high and dry with nothing except a trunk full of counterfeit euros. Well, you could burn it maybe, it gets a little heat in the winter for a few minutes. That's about it. So that's the only real happiness we can get out of this material happiness. So for a few minutes, that's it. So why should we labor like beasts of burden for this temporary happiness? And by the mercy of Sri Sri Gaurinitai and Srila Prabhupada, we can enter into the transcendental dimension beyond time of beyond time and space, even while we're still situated in these bodies. You can taste transcendental existence even while you're maintaining your material existence. You don't have to give up your job, your family, your career to go live in the Himalayas that taste transcendental existence. I just got an email from someone who says, I'm following ISKCON. My wife and I are living grihastha life. And he says, when Krishna says, give up every, you know, abandon all religion and surrender to me, does that mean I have to give up family life? Become a sannyasi? He didn't understand, because who heard the Bhagavad Gita? Arjuna, he was a family man. Did he give up his family at the end of Bhagavad Gita? No, he didn't give up his family. He simply gave up the false conception of acting for his own happiness. That's it. Instead of acting for his own personal happiness, he acted for the happiness of Krishna, for the pleasure of Krishna. You may say, but come on, I want to be happy. I want to act for my happiness. Why should I act for somebody else's happiness? The hand made that argument one time too. You know the hand? The hand says, why should I feed the stomach? It's just sitting, I'm doing all this work, cutting the vegetables, you know. I'm doing all the stirring it in the frying pan. I'm doing all this work and the belly just sits there and enjoys it. Forget the belly. I'm just going to take the food directly into my... I'm just going to squeeze it and... I'm just going to get the nutrition directly in my fingers. I'm not going to feed that rascal belly anymore. Actually, there's a story given in the Vedas, Prabhupada told. And the parts of the body, and they decided to go on strike. Don't feed Shishi Gornitai Kijai. And they decided to go on strike. Don't feed the stomach, don't feed the stomach, don't feed the stomach. They were demonstrating. You can imagine, like these labor unions nowadays, you know, they get their signs and they march back and forth and they chant their slogans, you know. You just imagine the parts of the body were form their labor union, you know. Local 101 or whatever, and they were demonstrating like anything. Don't feed the stomach. The stomach is a fascist pig. Don't feed the stomach. In this way, they were demonstrating and demonstrating and demonstrating, you know, burning some tires, you know. Like nowadays, all these anti-globalization demonstrations, you can imagine they may have gotten pretty fired up, you know. Trashing a few cars, you know, smashing a few windows. Don't feed the stomach, don't feed the stomach. With great enthusiasm, they carried on with their strike. But by the second day, they started, somehow they were losing their energy. Don't feed the stomach, don't feed the stomach. Stomach is a fascist pig. Don't feed the stomach. By the third day, oh my God. They couldn't even say anything. They're just laying there completely weak, trying to say one word. And finally, one of them got enough energy and said, I think we should call another meeting of the union. So they decided they better start feeding the stomach again, because the only way they got any energy. So we are like the parts of the body that don't want to feed the stomach. We don't want to give service to the supreme stomach, to God. Krishna says he's the supreme stomach. You know that verse? Bhoktaram jagatapasam. I am the enjoyer of everything. I'm the ultimate enjoyer of everything. In other words, I'm the stomach of the... I'm the universal stomach. Krishna is saying that in Bhagavad Gita 5:29. In so many words, I'm the universal stomach. So, if we don't feed, if we don't give enjoyment to that to Krishna, you see, we may think it's very good. I hear this is a lot of atheists here in Denmark. Yes, I can be very proud. I don't need God. I am great. I am a Dane. Yes. I don't need God. You see? But when it comes down to it, they're dependent on God for everything. Their every breath, their every heartbeat, their every drink of water, every morsel of food, it is all given by God. Can you manufacture food in your factory? Can you eat nuts and bolts? You see? Can you manufacture air on your assembly line? What about sunshine? The things you depend on, they are all the gifts of God. They are given by God. So, therefore, instead of trying to enjoy independently from the Lord, we should offer everything to Krishna, to God, first, before we enjoy it ourselves. And we still get to enjoy it. Simply agree, like the hand, to be the secondary enjoyer. When the hand feeds the belly, does not the hand get the nutrition it needs? Yes, the hand gets its nutrition. When it feeds the belly, it gets through the bloodstream the nutrition it needs. So when you give your loving service to Krishna or to God, you are not neglected. You are taken care of adequately. Not only that, you're actually serving all living entities throughout the totality of existence. This is the perfection of love. It is called universal love. When you give your love to Krishna, then you become perfect in love. Now we know that when you become miser, what do you become? Miserable. Miserable, you see. Miser means miserable. So the less you can become miser, the opposite works too. The less you are a miser, the more you become happy. So the more you can give love to all living entities throughout the totality of existence, every microbial germ even is a living entity. The ones you can't even see out there floating in the room right now. I don't see them. I know they're there. The scientists tell us they're there. So science is good to some extent. But not when they propose to know the meaning of life. They don't know. That they don't know. So, in this way, if we can forego being the primary enjoyer, just wait a little bit, let Krishna enjoy first and take the remnants of Krishna's enjoyment. Then we get unlimited happiness, unlimited peace. We become enlightened beings, free of all anxiety. We become fully realized in our spiritual identity, which exists beyond time and space even. This present moment, you have an identity which exists beyond the time and space of this material existence. All you have to do is, through the yoga system, reconnect with that identity, that personality who exists beyond time and space. And of all the yoga systems, the bhakti yoga system is the most recommended system. Because that system is easier to master and easier to maintain also. And the other yoga systems, they try by rigidly controlling the ingoing and outgoing breaths, by regulating very strictly the flow of the life airs throughout the body. They try to bring the mind under complete control as a lamp in a windless place. You see, they try to make the mind like that, a lamp in a windless place. completely non-flickering, absolutely perfect in steadiness. That is the goal of the yoga system. The hatha yogis try to do it through asanas and breathing exercises. But they remain vulnerable to the attack of the material nature because they don't know how to engage the material nature in the service of God. The bhakti yogi, the devotee, he's not threatened by the material nature. He utilizes the material nature in Krishna's service. You can give him unlimited material facility, he will not be overcome by greed. He simply sees it as more and more opportunities to serve Krishna. That's all. So in this way, try to understand a little bit about the science of self-realization. The perfection of the science of self-realization is to understand there is a person who is the source of all existence. This is not a sectarian religious dogma. This is pure science, pure philosophy. Do we have any experience that something comes out of nothing? No. We all have experience that something comes from something which comes from something. If you go back to the something that doesn't come from something, that's the origin. Now, what is the nature of that origin? That's the next question. So, we see that from that origin, so many persons have come out. I'm a person, you're a person. Now, if you disagree with me, that we are not individual persons, then you've just proven my point. You understand? If there was no distinction, we couldn't disagree. The fact that I'm a person and you're a person, the fact that we disagree proves that we are an individual person. The Mayavadi philosophers argue there's no individual existence, it's all one. But by doing that, they disagree with us and they disprove their own philosophy. So, we are individual persons, that's a fact. I have my likes and my dislikes. You have your likes and your dislikes. That's a fact. So, do we have any experience that persons come from impersons? Or let's give an example. Let's say there's a gold mine. And every day I bring to you from that gold mine one kilo of pure gold. Every day I bring to your door. Here's your daily, like the milkman in the morning. Here's your daily kilo of pure gold. The following one, this is very wonderful. I'm so happy you're bringing me this gold. Where are you getting it? Well, I have a gold mine. Well, how much gold do you have in your gold mine? There is no gold in my gold mine. That's a ludicrous thing. If you're bringing 1 kilo of pure gold every day from the mine, it must be loaded with gold, you see. So, if from the original source of all existence so many persons have come, then that original source of existence must possess personality. And something which possesses personality is known as what? A person. If you have, we've never seen something impersonal that has personality. Well, that Colin really has personality, you know. No. Something which possesses personality is a person. Only persons have personality, impersons don't. So, therefore, there must be a person who is the origin of all existence. And persons like love. We see that every person, even animals and plants who also are persons, they're covered more about nature, but they also have personalities. Especially we can see in animals, like domestic animals, it's more obvious. But every living creature craves love. That's a thing. There's so many pop songs written about it. You know. Love is all I need. It makes the world go round. Bob Dylan sang one. So there's so many songs based on, you know, talking about love, how important love is. So that, therefore, there must be, since everyone wants love, love must exist also in the Supreme Person. The desire to give and be love must also exist in the Supreme Person. So the science of bhakti yoga is the science of how to perfectly love that Supreme Person. That's what it is. And by so doing, how to automatically love all living entities throughout the existence, because that original person is the root. He is the stomach. By satisfying him, watering that root of the tree, then all the leaves and branches are nourished. So these are some of the points about our Krishna consciousness philosophy. Try to understand them very carefully. Try to see the benefit of serving that person who is indeed the source of all existence. You may call him Krishna, you may call him Rama, you may call him Jehovah. We are not sectarianists here, that God only has one name, like some people say, which is a ludicrous proposal. My father was known by different names. My mother called him one thing, my wife called him another thing, I called him something. My brother, his college buddies, his parents, his boss, so many different names my father was known by. So if my father is an ordinary man of this world, can be known by so many names, why God only has one? Is that an intelligent philosophy? God's limited to one name? I mean, that's ridiculous. That's crazy. It's madness. God can only have one name. Come on, what are you getting? I mean, this is ridiculous. If God is God is unlimited, otherwise how can he be God? God must be unlimited. Therefore, he must have unlimited names also. So you can take any name for the Supreme from the revealed scriptures, any authorized name which is accepted by God, and you can worship God through that name. We don't say you have to chant Krishna, but we are chanting Krishna because this particular name has the potency of including all the other names within it. This is the Maha name, the great name. But if you feel it's Hindu or something, then chant your own name, that's all right. Jehovah or Allah or something like that. Christ also is a name for the Supreme Father. Jesus of the Christ actually is the original meaning. Jesus is the first name and Christ is the last name. Jesus Christ, like John Smith, Jesus Christ. So Christ refers to the Father, actually. It's a derivative of the word Krishna. It came through in Greek as Christos and came out as Christ, finally, in English language. It's the same word Krishna. Simply through some etymological derivation, it becomes Christ. It's the same Krish sound. Whether you put a na or a ta at the end of it, Christ or Krish, Krishna, it's the same thing, actually. The same sound, slightly modified through etymological transformation, which happens culturally, naturally, and throughout world history. Words evolve and they change, but we go back to the original Sanskrit, which is unchanging, to get the original pure forms of the words. So anyway, my wife, Vishnupriya Mataji, is sitting back there. She and I are very happy to be with all of you here today. Gaurinatharaj Prabhu has kindly invited us here. We're in the midst of a world preaching tour, lecturing on this amazing science of bhakti, and lecturing all over the world in this amazing science, trying to stir up a revolution, you know. Prabhupada told us, you know, we have to revolutionize the planet, so we're trying to do whatever we can, you know, stir up a revolution. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Adhikari used to say, when the high court judges are wearing tilak, then we are successful. So we're trying to, you know, push, nudge things in that direction, whatever little bit we can do. We're trying to nudge things in that direction. That day will come and all the high court judges will bring Vaishnava Tilak. So anyway, I can ask if there's any questions. And speak up because I'm rather deaf.
Thank you very, very much, Krishna Prabhu and Priya Mataji, for coming to Denmark. First, I want to really express my gratefulness and thankfulness. I have one question. What is the particular reason that we often fight and quarrel and argue with one another, not only amongst devotees, but in general, the public in general, about different religions?
Yes, it's because we think there are different religions. Religion is one, to develop pure love for God. That is religion. How many different names for the sun are there? Every language has a name for the sun. You know, Germany, they have a name. In Luxembourg, they have a name. In India, in France, in Mexico, El Sol. In Spanish, Surya. In Hindi, Surya. In English, the sun. So, if we would argue over the names of the sun, that'd be a silly thing. We will declare a war between the United States and Mexico over the name of the sun. It's the sun. No, it's El Sol. Don't you know? It's El Sol. No es sun, es El Sol, as you could say in Spanish. So, the same thing with religion. People have this crazy idea that, you know, that God is monolingual, that he only speaks one language. They don't have a clue that he's multilingual. You know, he only speaks my language. He only speaks German or he only speaks English. And that's it. If you address God in another language, like in Sanskrit, oh, you're of the devil. This is ridiculous. If someone comes in and starts talking about Surya, he has a right to do that if it's his native language, you see. Or if he's visiting India and he wants to speak Hindi, he wants to talk about Surya, does that mean he's a demon? So to say that somebody is calling God according to the name by which he's designated in Sanskrit, that he's a demon, this is supposed to be an age of, we're supposed to be educated in modern times with our universities and the internet now, and Wikipedia. We're supposed to be highly educated people who know about everything, who have access to all the information. So why are we still living back in a cave somewhere, in the dark ages, when it comes to philosophy? It doesn't make any sense, religion. It just doesn't make any sense. That's why people have to read Prabhupada's books. Because people just don't have the brains to understand what is the actual science of the self. They get caught up in all these bodily conceptions and therefore they fight. You see, if you're not a Muslim, we want to kill you. If you're not a Christian, we want to kill you. Sometimes there was that philosophy in Christianity too. Even recently in the Balkans, they wanted to, ethnic cleansing. If you're of this designation, you're dead. It's crazy. People don't understand the actual nature of the soul. So you had a question. Enough what?
Sukriti.
Yes.
And then how can one help this person to realize in the heart, not only logically or intellectually?
How can we help them realize that God is a person?
Yeah.
Prasadam is the best way. Feed them tons of prasadam. It works miracles. And by your own personal, by developing a loving, by being very personal with them and treating them, that's another way. By the kindness of a Vaishnava, you see, actually feel the love of a Vaishnava in one's heart. How this person is helping me, cares so much about me. If one can feel the love of a Vaishnava, that can also do a tremendous miracle to transform an impersonalist into impersonalist. For the four Kumaras, they just smelled the incense offered to the deities, or to some, was it the deities? They smelled the incense that had been offered to the Lord. Just by smelling that incense, they became personalists. So, it could be any number of things. Beautiful deity worship, nice kirtan, you know, the kindness of a devotee, prasadam, so many things can help someone get over the impersonal conception. And then there's the you can explain to them philosophically also the absurdity of the impersonal philosophy. It's actually absurd. They say that everything is one. Then why isn't everyone already liberated? Some sage became a fully enlightened being, so if it's all one, everybody would be enlightened at the same time. Why are some people enlightened and some people not, if it's all one? I mean, it's crazy. How you can say it's all one? I mean, we have male and female. How we can, there's an obvious distinction between male and female in this room. You see? How you can say it's all, I mean, it's just, there's millions of examples of how everything is not all one, like the Mayavadis try to claim. They say it's all one, but it just appears to be different now that in our state of illusion. But wait a minute. How there can be even a state of illusion if it's all one? If it's all one, how you can even have the illusion of duality? That could not even exist. So, I mean, it's just a crazy philosophy. It's all one. Really crazy. They like it because, according to the philosophy of it's all one, I'm God. I get to be God. I mean, I flunked out of school. I couldn't make it there. I tried to make it with my rock band, but they threw me off the stage. You know, I wasn't any good there. I tried to make it in business, and I went bankrupt. I tried to make it in politics. I couldn't even get one vote. You know, I just tried everything, But now I finally found Mayavadi philosophy. Now I'm God, you see. I finally got some position. Now I'm God. I failed in every other way, but at least now I'm God. So now I got it made. And I'm one up on everybody because I'm God. So people are attracted to the Mayavadi philosophy. I know very well because I was a Mayavadi before I became a devotee. Because that's all I had access to. I was looking for self-realization. And I found one book called The Book. And this book said that you actually are God. But right now you're simply playing hide-and-go-seek with yourself. You simply have to come out of hiding and be God. And that's what the book told me. And I tried it, and it worked for a few days, it seemed. But after that it went kind of sour on me. When things didn't go the way I wanted them to go, for a while I really thought I was God. You see, wow, this is great. I really am. I'm God. But it didn't work. It wasn't very practical. If you're God, then why do you have to go to work on Monday morning? You know? Yeah.
As a writer, if you're interviewed at a part and you're not in this God, but how about we actually say, you are God, but you are little God?
Who says you're a little God? My buddy?
Prabhupada.
Yes, yes.
He said, you are God. But
yes, that's all right. A little God. God means a controller. So you are the controller of your body. You're the controller of your house. You see, if your apartment, you're the god of your apartment, that's all right. Teeny god, we can say, yes. Yeah. You're the god of your body, yes. To some extent, you're the god of your body. But when you have to run to the toilet room, you're no longer the god of your body, now you're the servant. So, to a certain extent, yes, we are little gods. But to say we are the supreme god, that we can understand. That's right. Anything else? Question? Yes.
Yeah. I want to ask if you could tell a little about yourself and what you're doing. Because actually, we've never seen you before here.
Mm.
If you could tell, can you tell a little about yourself and your service and your preaching and your intimate activities?
Intimate activities?
And yes, about yourself.
All right. A little of a bio. Yeah, well, okay. Yeah, basically I was a typical American kid who thought that he could be happy. He was taught he could be happy just by, you know, going to school, making good grades and getting a job and all that kind of stuff, you know. But when I got to college, all of a sudden it was actually the same time that Prabhupada appeared in New York. I was entering college, and I just at that time my consciousness went through a transformation. That this doesn't make sense. I'm working hard to get a job. I'm working hard to make good grades so I can get a degree, so I can get a good job, so I can work hard to get a wife and kids and maintain it just so I can get sick and die and be buried 6 feet under. You know, it didn't make sense. I said, there's got to be more than this. This is not enough reason to work so hard in school, you know, to make good grades. It just doesn't make sense. Why am I working so hard just to be buried under the ground? You see? So I went on a spiritual search, which took me all the way up to finally the 71. When I met the devotees. When I had met them previously, but when I finally connected with a particular devotee named His Holiness Vishnu Jana Maharaj, I finally found a devotee who really connected with me, who really made me understand what Krishna consciousness was. I met many devotees before that, but I would defeat them in arguments sometimes with my Mayavadi philosophy. But this devotee convinced me, Vishnu Jana Maharaj, and to become Prabhupada's disciple. So I did that in 71. And then, of course, ever since that time, I've been studying and teaching the science of bhakti. I was just doing that in the U.S., but then in 2003 I started an e-course on the internet, which has become very successful, the Ultimate Self-Realization Course. We have over 8,000 people on the course. So that took me, now that I had a worldwide audience for my preaching, it took me, my wife and I started traveling, and now we do two around-the-world tours every year, traveling all over the world. In many places I go, I have people that are on my e-course. They didn't even know who they were, but they say, "Oh, you know, I get your daily meditations every day," and that's how I start my day. Many people tell me that. So in this way, I'm very busy trying to do my writing, which is posted every day. You go to www.backtohome.com, and one can sign up for my e-course. So, in this way, I'm just trying to serve the order of my spiritual master. He told me, in personal correspondence, he told me that to always be enthusiastic. He Prabhupada ordered me to always be enthusiastic. I'd written him a letter expressing my desire to push forward this movement. And he wrote me back saying, "I can see that you're a very sincere, enthusiastic boy who is so eager for pushing forward this movement. He said, now just continue enthusiastically as you were doing and surely Krishna will bless you. So I decided to take that order very seriously. And ISKCON has gone through a lot of ups and downs since I got that letter in 1971. But I didn't let any of the ups and downs of ISKCON faze me, because it didn't matter what was going on in ISKCON. Prabhupada's order was there, always be enthusiastic, and Krishna would bless me. So I've been doing that, and I've been getting blessed. I've been getting blessed for 37 years by Prabhupada's mercy, with Krishna's mercy. So in this way, I'm always connected with Srila Prabhupada. I'm always feeling how he's present with me, because I'm trying to serve his order in all times, places, and circumstances. I don't feel that Prabhupada has left. I feel that Prabhupada is still here, and he factually is here. So someone says, tell us about your pastimes with Prabhupada. I tell him, well, I'm having one right now. This very minute, Prabhupada is here, and he's blessing me with his mercy to preach on his behalf this message of Krishna for the enlightenment of the fallen souls of this age. So there's a little bit intimate stuff about me. This is the useless soul that was saved by Prabhupada. And I'm always begging that he can save me. Yes.
I wonder one thing that which surprised me also one day for a long time, that is this age, in Kali age, we are know the name Krishna thanks to.
In this age of Kali, we are.
This age, Kali Yuga, and this we know thanks to the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that we know the name Krishna is very popular for the Supreme Godhead. But in Satya Yuga, the original is Satya Yuga, it was that time somebody told me that it was the name was mostly common, name was Vishnu, not Krishna. So the same person, I mean to say the same Godhead. But he has a different name.
Yeah, well, Krishna's name is always powerful in every age, although they may have chanted other names in other ages. The mystic yoga system was the self-realization technique in the Satya Yuga. They would sit and do the mystic yoga system, Ashtanga system. Yes, even we see Dhruva Maharaj, he saw Lord Vishnu in the forest, for example. Yeah, this is the sweetest age because this Krishna is emphasized in this age. Actually, the great sages, they worship the Kali Yuga as the best age because this is the easiest age for becoming spiritually perfect. Easiest age. They worship the Kali Yuga as the best of all ages. So we are very fortunate. We were born in the Kali Yuga, in the era of Prabhupada, the Prabhupada era. You see, we are most fortunate.
Shortcut.
Yeah. Any other question? Yeah.
What does it mean to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna?
What does that mean?
What does it really mean?
What does it really mean? It means just that. You have to always remember Krishna at every minute. You have to connect everything you do with Krishna. Don't ever be disconnected from Krishna. Not even for a second. In everything. Prabhupada, when I first met him, first had his darshan face to face, eye to eye, he told us in that meeting. He said that Krishna says, Rasoham Mapsukonteya, I am the taste of the water. So if every time you drink, he says, every one of us, or every one of you, are drinking water once, twice, thrice, more than that every day. He said, if every time you drink water, you remember that Krishna is the taste of the water, in this way you immediately become Krishna conscious. So I can tell you, in this vein, that It means whenever you drink water, you must remember that Krishna is the taste of the water. That's what it means. So if you will do that, you'll always remember Krishna every time you taste water. And you will always remember Krishna when he says, I am the light of the sun and the moon. Whenever you see anything is illuminated, it is all sunlight directly and indirectly. Even this electricity, it is a transformation of sunlight. So every time you see illumination, you remember Krishna. You see, in this way, you can always remember. So our time is getting a little late. So, where is the next lecture?
Tomorrow morning will be, of course, a morning class.
And what time?
At 7:45.
And then tomorrow evening?
Tomorrow evening there is a program at the house of Matu for mainly the Indian congregation and the temple devotees. So,
everyone else is invited to. So everyone knows where that is?
Yes.
Okay. Mostly and then the night after that at Madhavananda's.
Yes, on Friday.
And everybody's invited there too.
Yes, it's also.
And then Friday there'll also be a morning class. Saturday there won't be a morning class.
I don't know when you have to leave, but
Saturday we're leaving early before. So everyone's welcome to come to the classes. We thank you very much. Raja Vidrash, Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.